Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we thank all of you for tuning in to our weekly broadcast here at New Day Resurrection. This is, of course, one of the official radio broadcasts for the Million Woman Universal Movement, and, of course, we make certain that we continue to do the work from the original Million Woman March as we proceed in developing the first global movement for all women and girls of African descent worldwide. Now, tonight we are going to cover several different topics. And, of course, last week we had kind of a light topic, but at least we were able to laugh a little bit about some of that. Well, this week, unfortunately, we might not have as many laughs as we had last week because some of the topics are really, really disturbing, heart-wrenching, and so forth. But we will, of course, at least do what we have been doing for the past few weeks, and that is to bring you our history, her story, our story moments. And we're going to do that very shortly and bring Sister Coker in to share with us who we're going to be talking about tonight, since this was probably our final segment for Black History Month 2014. And with that said, of course, this week, we were able to learn of the transition of Bobby Womack, and I had initially planned to play just a couple of cuts or a couple of minutes from some of Bobby Womack's. He had a huge catalog as it pertains to writings, but unfortunately, we were having some technical difficulties, and that's why we were kind of a few minutes behind tonight. We were not able to connect the way we wanted to bring you the musical portions of what we wanted to do, but perhaps we can do that later on in the week. And so, with that said, again, at the age of 70, Bobby Womack made the transition this week. I'm sure Sister Coco will have some words about that as well when we bring her in, but we want to at least say that at this point. We also are going to pay tribute tonight to Kwame Ture, who would have had a Earth Day, or we still celebrate his Earth Day this week. And in paying tribute, we're going to talk a little about him, of course, some of the contributions that he and the organizations that he has been involved in. Some of those contributions really, I think, is very important to the development of African people liberation, not just here in the U.S., but, of course, globally, in other countries, particularly in Africa. We want to talk a little bit about that because it's very important that we know and understand work that has occurred prior to this time period and even in a more recent time period because we have to continue to bring that work forward. That's so very important. And I'm beginning to realize that even more as I begin to examine what's really going on in our communities. I mean, it is just amazing to see what is really going on. And for certain, here we are in so-called 2014, but when you do the assessment and evaluation of productivity, I mean, it just blows your mind, or at least it blows my mind, to realize what has happened and why some of it has happened. I mean, we know some of the obvious things, but we're not talking about some of the other things that has happened. People really kind of put us in some precarious situations, and I'm talking about people who knew and know the various plights that we're in, how some of it has happened, and in some cases have assisted to, keep that going. So we're going to start talking more about that because we feel obligated to do so. But at any rate, before we go into our program tonight, as usual, we always give thanks and praise to the Creator, and we certainly are very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Let's see. One of the things that we're going to bring to our discussion tonight, and we're going to open the chat room very shortly, and that is, I'm sure many of you have heard in the past some dialogue or information or saw some information as pertains to the fact that we have had people in recent months to report that they have had loved ones whose body parts were missing at the time of burial. And this is something that, again, we have avoided in our community in terms of the dialogue. And so we're going to talk about that tonight, and we're going to talk about it very candidly and somewhat in-depthly, and we're going to continue that dialogue as we proceed on in the next week, because it is something that we feel we really need to speak more about and certainly make people a little more aware of it. It is something that is going on more than we realize, obviously. And just a few days ago here in Philly, well, there was a report, and the report came from an elder. Her name is Mary Anderson, and she is filing a lawsuit. She's filing a lawsuit against one of the hospitals here in Philadelphia known as the Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. Now, as it turns out, her son died of lung cancer in 2012. And as it turns out, it was found that their organs were missing at the time of the burial. Now, we just got the story recently, a couple of days ago, within the past couple of days, that is, and we plan to have Ms. Anderson on our program as soon as we can schedule it. We're working on that, but we wanted to at least prepare you for this dialogue and to help to create the awareness that is necessary, because we take for granted that, certain things just automatically are, happening, meaning if a person is someone, a loved one or a friend or whatever makes transition, we just automatically assume that, an autopsy is done, and just to determine, what the cause of death actually supposedly is, but we stop there. Well, we have raised that question and raised that issue previously, especially when it came to the death of Dr. Khalid Muhammad in 2004. We raised that question. Of course, he passed in 2001, but in 2004, we had an inquest and began to ask questions as to, what happened, not just in terms of his actual cause of death, but also, some other questions were being raised, and some of the answers are still not brought to light. But nevertheless, we've also heard of a situation in Atlanta, I think it was last year, where a young brother was killed, and then it was found that his organs were missing. And, of course, those of you who are familiar with the elder Dick Gregory, I'm sure you have heard him say on numerous occasions over the past few years about organs being taken from our people. Well, we now can confirm this case here in Philadelphia. As a matter of fact, I'd like to share with you some of the words that Ms. Anderson said in the report that was given, and also what the hospital said. This is just a snippet from the report, and you can go online and just put in, mother is suing for organs being taken from her son. It says here in the report, Mrs. Anderson says, and this is a quote, "They just threw my son away," Anderson said. "I don't think people know what they're doing to their loved ones. Ain't no way in the world to me they're going to take my son and experiment with him and throw his organs in the trash, that I would have consented to that." The story goes on to say, a spokeswoman for the hospital explained, and this is a quote, "When performing complete autopsies, it is customary for academic medical centers that are engaged in educating future doctors to remove and retain organs and tissues for teaching and for continued analysis. Now, this is pretty much what this person said representing the hospital. It says, finally, Anderson has since filed a lawsuit claiming that the hospital stole her son's organs without permission. She says they threw away her son like garbage. They're using his organs for research. Okay. That's one of our topics for tonight, family. And again, when I was talking to one of our brothers who's a part of our brotherhood, it kind of made him think as well, because the question has to be, how many of the funeral directors knew that this was going on and, of course, never informed the families that this was happening? Surely they knew that the organs weren't there. So this is going to open up a whole can of worms, to say the least. And I don't think it's going to play out very well in terms of, once again, how our people have been duped and tricked and played. It's just incredible. These things are happening, but at the same time, it's also wonderful that we are becoming more aware and certainly more prepared. Lastly, and then we're going to bring Sister Coker in. Sister contacted me earlier, and I had not gotten the story until today, which means we are in the process of investigating it, as we tend to do here at New Day when we get stories that we feel we need to share with you. Again, I just got this information today, and starting tomorrow, we will, you know, begin to look in it further. But the story is that a sister was recently found dead in Detroit. Now, I'm saying these things because I know that you all will connect the dots. Those of you who have been listening to our program on a regular basis, you're going to be able to see what it is that's being said here. Now, this sister, her name was or is Alicia Fox, and she was found roughly a few days ago, shot, I believe, twice, and, of course, died of the gunshot wounds. Her husband has been arrested and is now in custody, and then there is a second person who is said to help to facilitate her murder. One of the biggest issues and problems with this particular case is that there were two children involved who are now missing. The two children is 8-month-old Christian Justice and his sister 6-year-old Kayla Hunter. They are still missing. So we're putting out an alert, a call to all of you, because there's no telling where the children could be at this point. If you are able to go online, you can go to Mother Murdered, Two Children Missing in Detroit, or something to that effect. We also have a link that we can provide to you in addition to photos of the children. Again, if you contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com, if you cannot find that information, we will forward it to you. We will also forward other links to you that will give you information about the murder, about the upcoming trial on July 2nd, which will be for the person who is being accused of assisting the father with this murder. Okay, so again, we hope to have someone on the radio program next week to provide you with more in-depth information. We were attempting to do that tonight, but it just wasn't enough time to get that. We just got this information just a couple of hours ago. Now, again, I want to point out something else, and that is that while it appears, according to the report, it says something to the effect that blood was found in the house, hospital department of where the sister lived. But also, it indicates that the person who is going to trial on July the 2nd was being held on $50,000 bail bond. Now, that just sounds a little strange to us. I'm not sure why that would be, but that is a question that we certainly plan to ask, because it just, again, sounds a little strange. At any rate, we're going to talk a little more about that as we proceed. But for right now, what we're going to do is get ready to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker and talk about you know, some of the folk that she was able to kind of highlight for us for this week as we close out the 2014 Black Music Month. Before we do, I want to again remind you that the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Our Women and Girls is in effect, and this is one of the reasons why, again, this story tonight kind of, you know, hits close to home, because we have been really working diligently on how to proceed in dealing with this campaign and bringing it on the national level. We want to also remind you that Chicago, of course, is now deemed as the murder capital of the U.S., and we've had this discussion before as to how the various urban cities tend to take turns in, you know, murders. Well, if you can recall, I believe it was last year or the year before, there were quite a few murders going on in Detroit, particularly of Black women and also Black children. So I'm saying, again, can we connect some of these dots? Lastly, we want to remind you that, of course, Detroit is still in a state of bankruptcy, even though the corporations are, in fact, putting up money to somewhat bail them out, as they say. But as we know and have talked about the issue of gentrification, there's a national plan to really privatize and take these various cities over to the degree where, well, you all know. And we're going to talk more about that as well. But for right now, let's go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker. And we're going to talk a bit about some legacies, some of our people who have made some very tremendous contributions, particularly in the music industry. We're going to talk. Oh, and by the way, one of the other things we're going to talk about is I just learned, just never ceases to amaze me. How did Black Music, how did Black Music Month come about? Anybody know? Let's see. We're going to ask you all that later on and see if somebody knows. How did Black Music Month become a national observance here in so-called North America? Very interesting what we found. But at any rate, let's go to our live line. Sister Coker, do we have you with us?
Yes. And praising our Creator for these 7 consecutive years of Black Talk with Empress, producing and being the program hostess of this excellent information session. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, my sister. So who do you have for us tonight?
Now, this month, we mourn the loss of one of Philadelphia's finest, Corbett Dewey Banks. Born October 31st, 1942, he transitioned June 15th, 2014. He was one of the first indigenous Africans born in the United States to own a business on South Street. He belonged to countless groups working to enhance the quality of everybody's lives. He disseminated the Black cultural experience through his deeds. His volunteer involvement with the renovation of the historic Uptown Theater inspired the organization to establish the Corbett D. Banks Award of Excellence to be given to individuals who exemplify Corbett's spirit of volunteerism. Corbett was a dedicated son, sibling, and father, and all of us who knew Corbett are forever touched by his royal spirit. The June 22nd celebration of Corbett's life was indeed an honorable tribute to the life of Leroy Corbett Dewey Banks. We also mourn the passing of Clifford Dunn. Now, you might not know who he is. He's the baritone singer of Philadelphia's own The Dream Lovers doo-wop group. On June 27th, as was already stated, the legendary soul singer Robert Dwayne Womack, also known as Bobby Womack, transitioned. He was born March 4th, 1944 in Cleveland, Ohio. Womack composed songs and played the guitar. He was one of five sons of two musician parents. As gospel singers, the Womack brothers were known as the Valentinos. He married Sam Cooke's widowed wife, and he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2009. And then I just have a few other people who were born this month. Hazel Scott was born June 11, 1920. She was born in the Port of Spain, Trinidad, and she was the first black woman to host her own TV program. Roy Ennis was born 1934 in St. Croix, June 5th, in St. Croix, United States Virgin Islands. And he was a promoter of nationalism. Charles Drew was born the 3rd, 1904, in Washington, D.C. And he's the man who set up blood banks. Paul Dunbar was born the 27th, 1892, in Dayton, Ohio, and he was what is known as a dialect poet. And some of the other people born, a couple of other names that I really didn't have time to research. So that's about it. Next month we start in July, and I'm going to do better. I honestly have to do better. There's just too much going on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I enjoyed June, and I'm looking forward to July. And so thank you for this opportunity.
All right, my sister, and we thank you. Now, before we let you go, I think it would be really important to ask about or to tell more about the Uptown Theater, because of course we have people, of course, who are calling in from California and from New York and, you know, different places, and they might have heard of the Uptown, but, you know, for the most part may not have heard. And, of course, like the Apollo Theater, the Uptown Theater was a very, very significant and historical theater, especially during the 1950s and 60s. So can you talk about the Uptown Theater and you know, particularly, you know, some of the people who were there that performed, because I know you used to go to the Uptown.
Yes, indeed. And as you said, it was very similar. It was our version of the Apollo Theater in New York. This Uptown Theater was our Georgie Woods, who many people know, was a, I guess they called him a disc jockey back then. He was the one who led all the programs. He was always the host. And for $2, you went into the Uptown, and you were there all day. So you never once went just to see one show. You saw at least two shows on that $2. And the shows came about two or three times a year, and they were there for about, I would say, anywhere from 1 week to 2 weeks, if my memory serves me correctly. And my sister's brother and I used to go to the Uptown every time there was a show. All of the great names Little Stevie Wonder, everybody you want to know who's become great today were once at the Uptown Theater. And so Corbett was part of that group of people who was trying to bring it back to its greatness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for 2 hours, we just had a ball. It was just wonderful, clean, wholesome fun. Jackie Miles Mabley appeared there. I'm telling you, when that was, before she came out, you were on the floor laughing in anticipation of how she would look when she came out there. You come out and stand on the stage, and everybody's still laughing. Just the way she was dressed, she always came out looking like a cleaning woman with cap on her head. And she's standing there, and she said, everybody else is sitting down. Where's my chair? Of course, you know that's how she sat. Then somebody would bring a chair on the stage, and she'd sit down, and we'd be rolling on the floor. Just clean, funny humor. And if you don't mind, I'd like to do one of her jokes.
Sure.
Went to the asylum to visit her friend one day. She had this glass up on the wall, trying to listen to what's going on next door. And so she said to Jackie, her friend said, she gave her the glass and she said, do you hear that? And Jackie said, I didn't hear anything. She said, been like that all day. Well, we just fell out. She was just so incredible. And one more quick one. Her friend wanted to commit suicide, so she said, how you commit suicide? So he said, well, you take a gun and you put it under your left breast, then you pull the trigger. And then she said, and that woman shot herself in the knee. Well, first of all, you had to figure out what she was saying. That was funny, but the fact that her breast was so hanging that she put the gun under the breast and she it was just too funny. She's the funniest woman in the world. And so this is the kind of enjoyment and entertainment we had from the Uptown Theater. And prayerfully, that will reopen and we'll have more shows like that for our children. It was good, clean fun. All the acts, a lot of local town, I can't think of any names. But anyway, even Michael Jackson, all those people, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, everybody.
Temptations, Marvin Gaye, Mary Wells, all of the Motown groups would come to the Uptown Theater here. And then, of course, you had some of the groups from Philly, the Intruders, the Delphonics, and, of course, Patti LaBelle.
Yes. And then they even allowed us to go up on the stage and dance. And there was this old man who would get up on the stage, and he was so old it was a shame. But he got up there acting like a crazy person dancing. So he was known as Uptown Pop. Plain, clean, wholesome fun.
Wow. Thank you so much for that update or that insight. The Uptown Theater is being revised. Sister Linda Richardson and the Uptown group up there is really working to, you know, bring it back into the mainstream of things. I'm just hoping, though, that we can, you know, do something that's going to be independent. That's my major concern, because over the years, there's been, just like with the Apollo, there's been, the various theaters have attempted to open up or to, you know, reestablish themselves, but for whatever reason, they get caught up to these kinds of loans and other things that is offered to them, and we all know what happened with that.
Yes.
So hopefully they'll be able to do something and it'll be independent. But Sister, I want to thank you again. And, we look forward to bringing you back next week.
Right. And I feel blessed and honored to be able to do this. Thank you.
All right. And thank you again. Okay, family, again, we are not going to be able to bring you the music portion that we had wanted to do tonight. We may end up doing a special edition maybe on Tuesday, since I think that is the last day of Black Music Month. Oh, wait a minute. Let me go back to Sister Coco for one moment. And, family, I'm going to raise this question to you all, and if you know the answer, please press 1. And I'm going to ask you to share it with us, and that the question is, how did Black Music Month become, how did June become Black Music Month? Now, I'll give you a hint. It happened in 1979, and I will also let you know that now, officially, it's also called, it's also called, I'm trying to think what's going on here. It's also called African American Music Month. Okay, so how do you think it got started?
You asking me that?
Well, I'm asking you and I'm asking our family. If
okay.
you know, please press 1. What do you think, Sister Coker?
Certain. But I do recall when it began, but I don't specifically know how it became.
Okay. Does anyone else know? I'm not seeing any signs here on my boards. Well, I'm going to tell you, and I just found out myself, so I'm not, you know, trying to put anybody on the spot or anything. I just learned about this a few days ago. I was relatively surprised. Kenny Gamble.
Oh, yeah.
Who, of course, is the co-founder of Philly International here in Philadelphia, contacted Jimmy Carter. At that time, 1979, Jimmy Carter was president. And it was Kenny Gamble, supposedly, who influenced Jimmy Carter to have this observance, which was called Black, and Jimmy Carter did agree to do so. And that is how, according to the report that I read, Black Music Month came into existence in 1979. Now, we've also learned that since President Barack Obama has been in office, he has changed the name, actually, to African American Appreciation Month. So for those of you who like little tidbits, we find that usually when you start hearing changes like that, then it's getting ready to get real interesting. Perfect example, here in Philadelphia, a very prominent part of Temple University, from an academic standpoint, was once called the Pan-African Studies Department. And it was renowned, and the work that it was doing and the types of discussions and the type of engagement was out of sight. Well, the time came when it came under new direction, and, of course, Temple University wanted to weaken the effect that it was really having, not just on the students, but on the community. And so somehow or another, the department then was changed, and the name became, would you believe, from Pan-African Studies Department, it became African-American Studies Department. So from just a general observation, when you begin to hear something that reflects a specific aspect of our history and culture changed to something called African-American, usually means there's something very insidious going on and needs to be watched. But, you know, who knows? It could have all just been an honest gesture, maybe. All right, Sister Coker, again, we thank you so much, and we look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you.
All right. All right, family. What we're going to do is go to our topic for tonight, and we're going to open up the mic for you, and we're going to also open up the chat room in about 5 minutes. The first topic that we're going to kind of have an open mic right now, because again, we were not able to get the people who we hope to have on for next week. We weren't able to get them on for tonight because, again, one story we literally just got a few hours ago. The other story, again, it's an elder, and so we needed time to, you know, to really communicate and narrow down the date and the interview with her. But the issue of organs. Now, we're going to start talking more about this because it seems this is something we need to bring to greater attention for our people. We all have had someone in our family who has made transition at some point in time, and we just take for granted that people act in a way that is respectful. Well, I dare say for some of us, you know, we've already understood and adopted in our lives not to trust very much that goes on from an institutional standpoint in this system, or at least if not to trust it, at least to make certain that we watch it carefully. Well, it now seems very clear that we've got to pay closer attention to what is happening with our deceased loved ones. Needless to say, the issue of organs being taken from bodies once they have been autopsied is happening more than you think. And so we want to begin to examine that a little closer and certainly to begin to have people to be more watchful and also more prepared to take action. Now, I read earlier the statement that came from representatives from the Thomas Jefferson Hospital here in Philadelphia, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, that is. And what we want to convey is that, which many of you know already, and if not directly, you kind of have an inkling of it, and that is that 9 out of 10, if it's a hospital that is connected to a college or a university, then you are dealing with student doctors. Issue number one, it's general practice, especially as it had been previously. If you were in a lower income bracket, you 9 times out of 10 ended up at a hospital that was being conducted under a university. The other thing, too, is that not only are these hospitals designed for the students to be able to proceed with their academic work or their apprenticeships or what have you, it also has served for research purposes. Many have been aware of this, but I don't feel that as a community or as black people in general that we have been as aware as we need to be to the fact of what is actually going on. So with that said, as we oftentimes know, when you are in a lower income bracket, you are very easily exploited, and 9 times out of 10 will be, especially when it comes to situations where they think nobody's going to be asking any questions. Well, now that issue is coming to light to a greater extent. And what we want to ask you all is, you know, what is your thoughts about this? How can we begin to, you know, address this issue? Now, one of the things that we plan to do in the very near future is not only to have a few people who have had family members, loved ones who this has happened to, but we want to also get an attorney on, you know, an attorney that we feel comfortable with to, you know, tell us about, you know, what the rights really are of the family and what can be done if we suspect this has happened to us. And so we want to go to our live line, and we're going to bring you all in on this dialogue for tonight. And, again, we're going to open up the chat room in a few moments as well and have you post your comments and questions there, too. So if you have something you'd like to share with us in regards to the issue of organ or what we call body part snatching, all right, that's what it is. Oh, and remember, it's not just for the purpose of, as they're saying, research. Some of these organs are being sold. That's the other thing. All right, and it's interesting because from what we've been told and from what we are researching, it appears that folks that are of African descent, well, their organs are really wanted. Wonder why. Anyway, if you have a comment or something you want to share with us in regard to that matter, please press 1 now. Caller, we're going to go to you. You're at 4381. We're going to open up the mic for you. And let's see if you have something you'd like to share with us in regard to the issue of organ snatching. 81, your mic is open.
Good evening, my sister.
Greetings, Sister Hattie. How are you this evening?
I am truly blessed. But I wanted to say just what you said at the end of your statement. This is a double-edged sword with these organs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just my mind that gets carried away with me sometimes. I truly believe that during all that era where those young men were murdering each other up in the hood, more so than they are now, I believe they were snatching organs left and right from those young children, those young African-American men, and selling them across the world, and that's why they had to create such havoc and hell in our community. That's number one. Number two, I know of in Kansas a situation where a funeral home informed the family that the child's organs were missing, who had been murdered on the street. And that being said, that's just one person that they were able to do something about it and challenge that situation. But back to the situation where the young man of the lady, I think you said her name was Mary Hansen, her son's organs being just taken. That just reminded me of that book by this woman. It was Henrietta Lacks.
Yes,
with that cervical cancer
they
piece.
Used her cells.
Used her cells. Did all of this research on them. She never knew it. Her family never knew it. And yet, they made billions of dollars and still are selling her cells. They discovered they could reproduce them, and the book was written about it, Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks or something like that back in 2010. Essence magazine did a story on it. So we have always been in every dimension, unfortunately, of this country's, of this society, wherever you look in any organization. We're the ones, African-American people, that are exploited, that are abused, that are just taken advantage of in any way that can be. And, you know, just like the syphilis test they did, Tuskegee, it's like, and then they co-opt African-American people, black folk, to get involved with it. For instance, okay, black people, we don't have any organ donors. Can you all donate organs? Well, we all know in our head, if you have an ounce of brain left in you, black people, what's going to happen if we show up at the hospital and you are an organ donor. We know what's going to happen, who's going to get it in an astronomical. Then they'll be doing research on why do so many African-American people not get them and then the white folk get the organ. Just baloney. That's just kind of my comments on this situation for tonight, and I just hope that Henrietta Lacks' family have gone to court with them to deal with some of that from day one, starting at Johns Hopkins, who took these cells from her, all the way over to Columbia, where the research was mainly done at, that continued on and on and on back 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So,
you know, the last time I checked, there is an actual foundation that the family supposedly has the jurisdiction over, but when I looked a little further, it seemed that the woman who did the book on that really kind of had a lot to do with it. And I also want to note, if I remember correctly, it was a white female that wrote
that's
the book.
That's correct. Scoop.
Okay. And I find that very interesting. I found it a very similar situation when it came to Mother Rosa Parks. When we began to learn more about Mother Rosa Parks' activism prior to her being on the bus situation, it was kind of like, are you kidding? Because it was a white woman, again, that wrote this wrote this piece on Mother Rosa Parks prior to the famous bus situation. And what we learned was that she was an activist, a very, very committed activist in dealing with the issue of rape, particularly rape, of black women prior to the whole bus thing. And led a rally and a boycott.
Mm-hmm.
In the town, I forget which town she was in at that time, because there was a black woman black women at that time were being raped regularly by white men. And town was so fearful that, they really would not respond because, you're talking about Klan country, and these people weren't playing. But the community was very afraid. And this one time, this woman was raped, and she was raped so badly they threw her to the side of the road to die after they did all of what they did to her. And finally, the community got so outraged that they then began to kind of, rise up, and there was a boycott of the stores. They were going to boycott the stores, and most of the stores were white, of course. And that began to change things a bit. People got a little more courage and so on and so forth. And this was Mother Rosa Parks that headed that up, or was one of the key people that had that. But my point being, Sister Hattie, is that we didn't get that specific kinds of information to the degree that was presented in that book until a white woman wrote it.
Right. Well, that was the other thing I was going to mention. It always takes a white person to validate our abuse, our systematic demise in this country, which is a whole other level of racism within itself. And, they do have that Rosa Parks Sexual Assault Crisis Center in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Last I heard. So that was the real work, and, people don't know about
it. That's right. That's right. This is why we have a campaign that we're going to be really pushing very hard, because we are now preparing ourselves, Sister Hattie, to raise the question, if the time had come, which it had, needless to say, for there be a holiday for a black man, meaning Dr. Martin Luther King, is it now not the time for there to be a holiday for a black woman?
Mm-hmm.
We dare say yes.
Really?
We dare say yes. Okay? And so in October of this year, when we hold our Million Women March Week, that will be one of the questions that's going to be placed on the floor. And so we're encouraging our sisters to really become a member of the Million Women Movement, because that will give you voting rights, so that we can begin to really make some determinations on some of these things that we really want to and must bring forward. As you just said, Sister Hattie, and as many have said, we are not doing what we're supposed to do. Anytime we have to have other people write our history, I mean, that's just crazy.
Sure.
That is absolutely insane. With all the brilliant people that we have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. We just have so many. I think people are so bogged down, and masses just struggling over survival, and then all of the abuse that we take. I'm afraid to say that other people have a lot more time to do that.
that's true. But Susan,
and resources.
You know what? Listen, but here's the reality, for real, for real. You and I both know that we have thousands of scholars now. We have more folks with bachelors and masters and PhDs than ever before.
Yeah.
And people are writing, if not books, they're writing articles. They're on, you know, they're doing a lot of different things with you know, there's so many forms of communications now. There's so many social networks and so forth and so on. So, you know, and I'm saying they're putting all other kinds of stuff out. They put stuff out to me that's like, why waste your time?
Right,
so,
that's true.
My point being, I'm saying the people who do have the ability, the writing skills, they have the know-it-all in terms of publishing it online or circulating it through the various networks, I'm saying, something wrong with this picture.
No, I totally agree with you on that. We just, the priorities have been an issue for quite some time, I think, for us as black women. Priorities.
Absolutely.
Now, what I'd like to know is what's the process for engaging in the Million Women Movement in official capacity? Is there a membership fee, an annual membership fee?
What we're going to do for next month, we're going to really provide a lot of information. In fact, I'll make sure you get that for this coming week. And anyone else that's interested, just let us know. We'll send you that information. Because
and do you have that date set out yet at all for October?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, I don't have it in front of me, but I almost remember it's from October the 20th through the 26th of October.
Okay.
We're having Million Women March Week. And a lot of the campaigns and the things that we've been working on over the years, we'll be unveiling them and getting them ready for actual kinds of action. And the other thing, too, for July, from the 25th through the 27th, is Queen Mother Moore Weekend. And, again, we'll have information ready for you for next week on that, because what we are doing is bringing forward the work of Mother Callie House, and for those who don't know of that name, please feel free to look it up. We're hoping to bring in the sister who did the book on Mother Callie House. But Mother Callie House was the one in the 1800s was talking about not reparations using that word, but the words that they were utilizing was workers' compensation. In other words, for the descendants of those who were enslaved, they were demanding what was being called workers' compensation.
And now they have turned it all around to mean workers' compensation means totally something else, just as you were saying about the other African-American. That means something is on the horizon that is disastrous for us here again. But this is going to be in Philadelphia, correct?
Yes, that'll be in Philly.
Yeah,
but the objective is, because we're issuing a five-year action plan, and actually it goes a little beyond 5 years, it's really called 2020, which means by the year 2020, we have to have certain things. Now, I know, again, one of the topics tonight we wanted to bring forward was the issue of education. And over these years, we have been working very hard to look at what it is we must do about this thing we're calling education. Now, here in Philadelphia, we recently learned that 21 more schools is projected to be closed. They're working on 21 more. They closed 28 last year. Now it's 21 more schools, public schools, that is projected to be closed. In Chicago, it was 50. They're doing something similar in other cities. Now, we've been tracking these situations over the past months and, again, connecting the dots. Here in Philadelphia, there was someone named Paul Vallis who, once the school district felt that, you know, the schools were doing so poorly, they wanted to bring in management teams and consultants, and this guy named Paul Vallis was one of them. Well, when you do the track record on Paul Vallis, he was also in Chicago. He was also in Baltimore. And, again, these are cities that not only were, you know, know, claiming to show poor performance prior to him coming. Once he left, they was really in trouble.
Really in shambles, yeah. After all that.
Really,
yeah, that's
in
what
trouble.
Usually happens.
And see, Cincinnati, the thing is, these things are planned because most of these cities are projecting two things, either charter schools or privatizing the schools. So essentially here in Philly, mm-hmm. we already did the charter school thing. It is like totally becoming dismantled, especially the ones that are more geared to a black approach. If they're just mm-hmm. kind of, you know, hemming and hawing, and, you know, not hemming and hawing, but if they're just sticking to the program, then they're okay. But if they're trying to do something and it's a little more pro-black, 90% of them are in trouble.
That's right.
So
I had one of those in which I had one of those schools in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And when I wanted to institute some of those kinds of things there, that's when, boy, they opened fire on me.
Right. Well, they've done it in Newark. They've done it in Camden. They're doing it here in Philly. They've done it in D.C. And so what we're seeing, again, there is a pattern. And note, this education thing is, I mean, it's a multi-level kind of thing that really is about miseducating our children and just giving
exactly.
them enough in order to keep them working to service
yes.
this system. It's not
yes.
for them to be thinkers or real independent-minded, you know, kinds of entities. It's designed
absolutely.
To give them enough stuff so that they can continue to, you know, do the modern-day slavery thing. Absolutely.
And our people are the ones who really get in there and help them do it. They roll up their sleeves, some of the black superintendents, and they help them destroy and miseducate our community children.
That's why we have to begin proposing other options and alternatives. Now, we've been working here in Philly with real educators, and what we say is, we now say educators / edifiers, you know, because we have to look at edification.
Yes.
Obviously, education has kind of lost some of its, you know, reality. So we have to now look at edification, because that's the kind of direction we've got to look into going. And with that, developing our own curriculum, but also having our own schools. So that's a challenge, but it's one we feel is worth doing and fighting for,
right.
because obviously
right.
our children are not getting what is needed. So we're going to proceed with that conversation in the very near future. Now, I know some of you family have heard that Dr. Umar Johnson has proposed a school for boys. Well, for those of you who have been in tune to our program during the past 2 years, then certainly you have heard us say that one of our objectives is to have a school for girls. We've been saying it for the past 2 years
mm-hmm.
and have been working towards that effort. We had to kind of figure out how could we do it, meaning it has to be independent. We don't want to depend on grants and those types of fundings. So we had to figure out how could we actually start a school and then maintain it. Well, we've come up with some ways to do that, and we're now prepared to share some of that with you. But look forward to that for July. Now, Sister Hattie, if I remember correctly, you have a background in education. Is that correct?
That is correct. 37 years in public education. Science
okay.
teacher, principal, associate superintendent. Yeah.
Okay, see, we have all the people we need. So, Sister,
we
I'm
really
reaching
do.
Out to you.
We really do.
And I'm saying to you, we're going to create a national kind of commission to begin to formulate what we need to have for our people, for our children in terms of education. We need to have our own curriculums, our own methodologies.
Yep.
See, as far as this kept, I went almost to the point of becoming certified for early childhood elementary ed, And,
right,
and went through some of this brainwashing stuff of Piaget and some of these other people, and I was like, y'all got to be kidding.
Right, right.
No way. No way I'm going for this. None of this.
Right. We know you all, but we're not participating in it in that manner.
No. Mm-mm. But this is the training that teachers are given and the models that they are shown in order to duplicate.
Right.
People like Piaget and others. And now, since we're on this point, and family, I want to bring you all in, so please give me some feedback here. Recently, we began to reexamine. We've over the years been getting a lot of information about how did this educational system go into effect. One of my colleagues had done some research a few months back, and we looked at that, and over the years we were examining how some of this stuff really came about. And we began to realize in seeing where it's going, we had to look at how did it get to be where it is, meaning the methods of education, of so-called education in terms of public schools. Well, of course, there's now a lot of different websites out there, and people go to Alex Jones and a lot of these other people who, you know, supposed to be so, you know, American, Republic American or whatever it is. Anyway, there's some good information out there. Bottom line, when we looked at people like Skinner, when we looked at Sigmund Freud even, the point being that educators under different administrators, or really, shall we say, different administrations creating commissions or committees. And these various committees began to pull works from some of the top well-known European sociologists, psychologists, and so forth. And as a result, the education component began to emerge into this actual arm or wing of the government. Hence, research done by the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and so forth. And as a result, these various commissions were put together, and from those commissions, that information was disseminated into the various state boards as the recommendations for doing A, B, and C in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're seeing today, family, is the application, because remember, these people have guidelines that you have to follow to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so the methods, the concepts, the structure, and all of that, it is nothing up in there that is coming from the black folks, from a tradition or original standpoint. The modifications, there may be some modifications that some black folks came in on, but even their training was geared more to the white structure. Therefore, they pretty much follow, you know, the same paradigm. Point being, we're now in the 21st century dealing with a system of so-called education that was orchestrated by primarily European people. And
mm-hmm.
some of them have been connected to, shall we say, Germany
mm-hmm.
and other kinds of approaches in dealing with mind, if not control, manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Both.
Mm-hmm. So this is what we're dealing with. So when we say, well, our children are not performing well in school, okay, let me see. If you take a European child and put them in an environment that's structured from an African frame of reference, they would function in the same kind of way?
Mm-hmm. That's for sure not.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You see, so the expectations of what we think our children should be doing on a national level is based on what? On what standards? What are those standards modeled from? Who are they really geared for? And what are they really geared to do today? See, these are the questions that our educators really have to ask. And in asking and answering, then do the work that is necessary to, you know, remedy it, to make the change. So, Sister Hattie, I'm looking forward with your expertise and skills. We need you, sister, to assist us in formulating the type of structures that we need that we can model. You know, we can start with one, but, you know, the idea is we are providing some other possibilities, some other alternatives to our
And community. I love the idea of having a school for black girls.
Absolutely.
That is
Absolutely.
Phenomenal. Look at Wellesley College, places like that.
Absolutely.
It could be on that level, you know,
Absolutely.
Pre-K through all
Absolutely.
The way post.
And this is what we must do. I mean, how can we keep saying, you know, this is not our, your children aren't learning. We keep talking about the problem. But what are some of the solutions? And as I just said, we now have people who have doctorate degrees in African and African-American studies. Doctorate degrees. So are we saying today that we cannot have our own educational acquisitions? I mean, that's a major contradiction.
That is. It is. It is.
So, family, what do you all think? I want to open the lines to you. We need to make certain that we are able to provide not only the so-called academia or the scholastic training, but also skills. We have to be very realistic here and make certain that we can focus on whatever the needs are of our people. So what do you all think about that? Do you think we can do this? And if so, you know, how do you foresee us being able to do this? If you have an idea, suggestion, or if you're doing something already that is along those lines, press one now and share it with us. We want to also remind you that the chat room is open. Feel free to go there. And, again, we want you to know that we're going to have these ongoing dialogues during the next month or so, because by the time we get to September, which is really when school begins to open, we want to be able to have some possibilities. Now, before we go back to our lines, we want to remind you that we have invited Brother Delani Aman, who is the director, the founder of Harambe Radio, which I used to be on a few years ago, but he now has the Harambe TV, which is geared specifically for the education of the children. So we plan to have him on very soon to tell us more about that. So see, again, with this technology, there's just no excuses whatsoever. I see, looks like we got Sister Manira out there. I'm going to ask Sister Manira if she will share with us something about Women Build Too, because with Sister Manira sharing or starting the Women Build Too project in Newark, one of the things that we will be presenting in October is our little spin on that, which is youth and women build too, because there is a project called Youth Build that you find all over the country, and again, this is part of the public school system, but we want to be able to do it for our people, for our community. So we want to add on with what Sister Manira has started called Women Build Too. We want to add on Youth and Women Build Too, and that way provide skills that deal with the development of, you know, contracting, construction, even the business. But we want to also add in there drafting and architectural kinds of things, pursuits, things of that nature, engineering, those types of preliminaries to get them, you know, to that next level if they care to go. So let's see if I can get Sister Manira on. I know she wasn't planning on coming in, but let's see if I can get her on this. Just tell us a little bit about
where Women Build 2 is now. Sister Manira, can we get you in here right now? Okay, she's probably not near her phone, but maybe she will come in a little later on. Because I do see she's on the boards. I recognize her number, but she's probably not right near the phone. But if you do, if you hear me, Sister Manira, and you do, you are able to get in, just press 1, and I'll see that you're there. Okay, let's go back to Sister Hattie. Sister Hattie, tell me again, now, what was the school that you were in? What exactly was, what type of school was it? And what was the grade levels that you were working with? Sister Hattie?
Oh yeah, I'm here. I had a little I'm sorry. I had a little puking child.
Okay, no problem.
I'm so sorry. Now, say, what did you say again?
I was saying just to recap, what grade level were you working with again?
Mostly high school, but I did also pre-K through eighth grade and middle school. Anything between pre-K through high school, and I did do some college, too. I worked on college, University of Minnesota college campuses with African-American students who were black children who were studying to be science majors there,
wow.
Biology majors. So I have a lot of expertise, and I'm more than willing to share it with anybody, really, because it is such a critical thing for me to be able to help the community. And yet, like you said, when you have certain kinds of privatization, certain kinds of people that come through and they want to make sure that our children do not do well, they attack people like me and others. And I was probably about the only one left around in my community that was actually in those schools and in that arena, and so that I was kind of like they dug up.
Okay. Well, what we definitely need to do. Oh, absolutely.
Just like
this is why again it's so important that we begin to document and to create different types of resource materials. It's really easier than most think today. It really is. There's so much that can be done online be made available to people. So there's really no reason why we cannot begin to flood our communities with resource information, materials, and things of that nature. The question that Dr. Randy Short and others have had over the past months, one of the questions that we've raised and began to examine, and that is, of course, the ability of having an institution of higher learning for our people. This is something else that closer, because there seems to be a lot of issues with the historically black colleges and universities.
I'm glad you brought that up. Can I just interject something here before I forget it?
Absolutely.
My daughter is helping me with my little one who's having some little problems from eating a popsicle. I said, tell everybody, don't give you any more sugar. It's poison for you. You can't eat it. Anyway, my friend was telling me that the Koch brothers have infiltrated now the United Negro College Fund. They just gave the United Negro College Fund $25 million, which we all believe it should have been turned away coming from them. Now they have a seat there, and their seat, they have to have a representative there in order to give out this scholarship money. Now, I realize the United Negro College Fund was having some difficulty, financial difficulties, and I said when I heard it like 3 or 4 months ago how the difficulties were just so bad, we don't know what we're going to do. I said at that time, we can guarantee somebody's getting ready to come in there who really doesn't need to be in there. And here I found that out really just, I think, a week ago, if that. These Koch brothers gave them $25 million, and they accepted it, and that should have been something they should have turned away. to have the Koch brothers representative sit at the United Negro College Fund. What does
wow.
that say? The United Negro College Fund is for sale. So consequently, we know that the historically black colleges, yes, were in having challenges and struggles like any other schools, but what can we do as a people? I think one thing is that we can stop being so darn selfish. That's our main issue, if you ask me. Because like you said, we have all these resources, intellectual, and many have financial resources.
Right.
It's just so,
it's
so selfish.
Well, Sister Hattie, I want to tell you, these past 2 years have really helped me to understand and to accept some realities. And what I realize is that it is going to be a segment of our people that will do and focus on the things that need to be done.
Right.
I no longer have these great expectations, meaning as a people, we need not to be selfish. That I mean, I certainly, that's something that I would, that we strive for, that I would strive for, and others would strive for. But what I also know and believe very strongly is that that's how some of us not only think, but some of us are prepared to do. And what I have to be more cognizant of and be more apt to apply myself to is those who want to do that and are willing to do that and are going to do that. Because I think once we do that, then others will do. You know, either the intimidation or the connection or whatever you want to call it will motivate them. So what I'm saying is, we, those of us who feel this way, we've got to now do it and exemplify it in such a way that it will begin to speak. You know,
for
speak the volume.
Sure.
Speak
yeah, I agree with
say, you.
You
know,
totally.
So that's where we're at. Now, I can tell you this, and again, there's things that we can now share with our people. We could not do it before because our experience had taught us not to do or say things too soon because
right.
it was, you know,
I know.
People would try to co-op it. You know?
Well, they,
but
they
now,
actually steal it from you. They steal it and repackage it, and it's just, yeah, I know.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. So we had to wait until we had gotten a few things a bit more established, and now we are pretty much where we need to be. So I can
Great.
Say there are some things that are in the makings. We have connected with a few people who have shown interest and have indicated that they will support. For example, by October, we should have some confirmations ready for people in regards to some of the artists who will be helping us with collaborations. What we've been working on is to get some of the well-known artists, some of the ones that we feel comfortable with in terms of their
right.
messages. We've been asking or been, you know, talking with some about putting together a musical compilation. And the compilation would consist of various artists, but would be for the purpose of raising the funds for the Million Woman Movement's projects, or some of the projects that we have on the table. And this, again, would, you know, really facilitate a lot of different things, including the artists showing, you know, their support for, you know, for our women and girls in particular, but also, you know, their level of responsibility and appreciation for our history and legacy as a people, you see. So, you know, it's kind of a win-win situation because it's good PR for them as well. But it also, you know, helps to raise the kinds of capital or the kinds of funds that we need to facilitate, you know, some of the projects that we have. So, those are just one of the things that we'll be able to report to you all very, very shortly. So let's see. We're going to move to the next topic here. And again, this is kind of one of these nights that is some heavy stuff. And as we indicated earlier, we got the report just a couple of hours ago about a woman, black woman, who was murdered. And the two children are still missing, okay? And so we want to put that call out to you all. Now, this happened in Detroit, and again, we're still investigating the story. We did speak with indirectly with, you know, one of the persons in Detroit who was very concerned about this issue and gave us the number to contact the family. Again, we were not able to do so because we had just learned about it. So we're going to kind of move away from two topics that we've had, one being the issue of organs being taken from our people. I asked if there was some folk out there who had a comment or something that you wanted to share with us about that. But this is the handy. No one else had anything to say about that. I'm a little surprised at that as to why you would have no comment about the fact that these people are taking people's organs after being autopsied. And again, Sister Hattie mentioned that this was something that was a suspect some years ago. And, of course, both of you who are familiar with Brother Dick Gregory, you heard him say it right after the murders of the young boys in Atlanta. It was indicated that that was one of the things that was going on with that. And then in subsequent years, it was said that there were homeless people who were missing, and also that it was suspected that these two were people who were being used to do research on and or to harvest their organs. So, again, we put that out there to you all because it is a fact, and the information is coming forward to prove that this is happening. So we were hoping that you all had some comments about this, but it seems like you don't. So we're going to move on to the next topic, and we briefly did also talk about one of our other topics tonight, which, of course, was education. Here in Philadelphia, there's a whole lot going on with that issue. And, of course, the dialogue about vouchers is beginning to emerge again. The question around charter schools is also very much in the news, particularly a couple of the African-centered schools or so-called African-centered schools. But some of them are not you would really call African-centered because that really requires a comprehension and an application of certain types of views and concepts that are drawn from an African-centered curriculum or, you know, or somewhat of the philosophies or some, you know, something to that nature. So some of them are not really, even though they are considered black-run or, you know, whatever, they're not necessarily Afro or African-centered. But nevertheless, it seems like there are several schools here in Philadelphia that rather than working, you know, directly from the mode that is given to them, if they kind of, you know, aren't following that to the degree that the system wants them to, they tend to come under some kind of investigation or examination, and with that is said that the performance is not good and so forth and so on. But, you know, in reality, the performance can't be so good anyway, unless you are, you know, striving to continue to uphold the system, 9 times out of 10. And all of that is debatable, too, of course, but and we do plan to debate that. But nevertheless, that is what's going on. So, okay, so at any rate, we will proceed and continue at a later date with the issue of education. We want to talk more about homeschooling. And, of course, we want to certainly talk more about online types of education or edification and advancements in the academia, scholastic kinds of things. So you all will have some suggestions or ideas in the near future. Okay, moving right along, we are going to go back to the other topic that we were talking about, and that was, of course, the fact that it has been said the death of a young woman in the Detroit area. It happened, it appears like it happened maybe 2 weeks ago, but the body was apparently found just a couple of days ago. And the big issue here, of course, is that the children, there are children that are missing. There are two children in particular that are missing, and we need your help, family, to hopefully find where these children are. If you have not been able to get the information about this murder, please feel free to send us an email at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, and we will certainly send you the link and the other information that we were able to obtain about the story. Okay, let's see. There were some other topics we wanted to convey to you. Again, if you are looking for the story that we talked about, the sister's name was Alicia Fox, F-O-X Fox, and as indicated, her husband has been charged with the murder, but the two children are still missing. Again, the names of the children are Christian Justice, and he's 8 months old, that is, and then there's a young daughter. Her name is Kayla Hunter, and she is 6 years of age. We do have photos of the children, and so again, if you would like to have them, if you are not able to find them online, we will be more than happy to send that out to you along with other information about the story. Okay, looks like that's probably it for tonight. I'm trying to see if there is any other questions or comments or anything else that anyone would like to share with us for tonight. I thought we had the chat room open, but it seems, again, we've been running into some technical difficulties for tonight. So somehow the chat room got bumped out, it appears. Hopefully we can rectify all of that for you for next week. But at any rate, we're going to move right along. I'm going to ask once again if there's anything that anyone would like to share with us for this evening. And if not, I guess we can close out early. We are not able to bring the musical component that we wanted to bring, and so we have to do that at another time. But at any rate, okay. It looks like we've covered everything we need to cover for tonight. We do want to remind you, if you are of interest and would like to be a presenter for the Queen Mother More Week, we certainly invite you to do so by sending us a notice, our email, and we will send you the requirements for being a presenter. It is to focus on the issue of reparations, repatriation, and those things that are known as reparatory justice, etc. The session will take place July the 25th through the 27th. Oh, that reminds me. I knew it was another topic that we wanted to kind of bring to your attention, and that was we wanted to make certain that our women was grasped to a greater extent why it is so important that we make sure that our position, our identity, our realities and so forth are really made clearer. We had a conversation briefly last week. For those who were in tune, you might have heard a sister call in and was defending the phraseology or the idea of women of color or women in color or something like that. And we made it very clear that, you know, we don't have a problem with that. However, you know, that has to be dealt with in its proper place. We had a little, you know, indiscretion in that dialogue, unfortunately, because once anyone thinks that they can call into this radio program and try to make it seem as if what's being said is something that is offensive to them, well, that's not going to be my problem, especially if I'm the one saying it. I've obviously said it because that's what I believe. And if that's offensive to you, then, I mean, you know, what can I tell you? Unless it's been proven otherwise, if it being something that is not true, then, you know, again, it's not something that I'm going to waste a lot of time with. But what I did realize after talking with a few people afterwards, I realized that it's so important that we convey that it's without a shadow of a doubt necessary to assure that as African women, as black women, we must make it clear that we will and do and have supported women of color, meaning Asian women, Indian women, any woman that has some melanin. Our women have historically been involved in those groups and have supported those projects and efforts and so forth, and that we do understand why it was necessary to do that during the time period that that kind of thing was established. However, in the 21st century, it is incumbent and just so, you know, again, it's so necessary that African women, women of African descent, and I'm not saying women of color specifically, because for some, that's like a straddling of the fence, and that's okay in certain circles and in certain arenas. This is not one of them. So we're very specific in saying what we say. We're very clear and real in what we say and why, and therefore the position is and shall remain that our focal point is for women of African descent, African women, black women, et cetera. I'm not attempting to, you know, take a position in support of women unless I feel that that's something we should do. And we may do that and have done that, but that's not our major focal point. So I wanted to clarify that, not that I really needed to, but I say these things because if you're calling into this radio program, if you're listening in for this radio program, your opinions are, of course, welcome. However, be real clear that nobody's line is going to be pushed through this program, especially if it's not in sync with what this program's objective is. We will discuss various views. We will debate. We will exchange. We will agree or disagree. And that's all appropriate, and it's fine. But at the same time, you know, no one's agenda is going to be pushed on this program beyond a certain point. So I think that's only fair, and I can assure you that's the way it will be. You know, and I also want to clarify another thing. Another sister called and said that she was in support of the Million Women March and the Million Women Movement, and we appreciate that, and we thank all of you who are. But at the same time, over these past 15 years, 16 years actually, there's been many who have been in support of the Million Women March. We oftentimes question what that means, to what extent, but the bottom line is being in support does not give you the right to attempt to lessen, you know, what we're saying and what we're representing. So I just wanted to put that out there on the record. And, again, you know, we welcome and invite anyone who wants to be a part program of our group, but to understand that what that entails is, you know, not to think that we're going to change what we're doing or talking about. else thinks or says. So, again, I just wanted to put that out there to all of you. As we proceed in building what we are building and being very consistent with that, and with that said, being one of the few entities, organizationally wise speaking, and sisterhood that strives to be not only self-determined, self-sufficient, but also to, you know, really make certain that who and what we are is not compromised. That's the bottom line. All right, family, we're going to get ready to close out. And, again, I want to thank all of you for tuning into this segment. Next week we should have some live guests for you, particularly to talk about the two topics that we were talking about tonight, and that is that of organs being taken, stolen, you know, removed without permission and then being something else being done with them. And also, of course, the follow-up in terms of what has happened in Detroit with this young sister being murdered, Alicia, and the two children. You know, hopefully we will have some good news for you in terms of their finding. Please, again, feel free to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com if you would like to get pictures. We are going to post them on a few of our Facebook affiliates as well as in a few of the other groups that we are members of so that this information can continue to get circulated. Okay. Until the next time, we're going to close out for now, and we oftentimes will greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, but of course, there can be no real Hotep, meaning peace, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. And as we oftentimes have said and will say, if there's no justice, there will be no peace. No justice, no peace. So until next time, family, we thank you all again, and we will be back next week, same time. And again, we hopefully will have at least two of those reports for you, but we also think we have another surprise for you for next week as well. But until then, again, please continue to pass the word that we are here and we will be here. And we look forward to sharing with you again as we proceed in true liberation in the spirit of power, prosperity, and peace as only our ancestors would really have us to be as it pertains to the attainment of real justice. Until next time, Tutanana, Kamoja Tutshenda, together we shall